in and gets it down.
Welcome to the Big Dog Podcast, the official podcast of Chicago Hounds Rugby. I'm James English, and as usual, I'm joined with co-host and Chicago Hounds head coach, Chris Latham.
Good to be back. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And today we are joined by Noah Brown and MLR OG, Nate Augsburger. So welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Nate, you've been around the MLR a long time now. You came through the American rugby system. Has this year been different? What are the differences for you?
It's just been better, honestly. I think this is probably the best setup overall, just everything put together. So if you look at us having, you know, one location in SeatGeek Stadium, practice facilities that are, you know, walking distance across the parking lot or whatever, we got a great gym set up. We have a locker room for the boys. We've got recovery equipment and all those things. I just think like the professionalism is through the roof at the Hounds, which is great. SeatGeek is out of this world. It's been a great place to play rugby and grow my game, you know?
I think in the documentary, United States of Rugby, Billy Meeks referred to you as the best American rugby player he's ever played with. What's it like, and what's the pressure of being a role model like that to the likes of, I'm sure, Noah and other players?
For me, ever since this professional competition has started, I've wanted to make sure that my presence was felt and I was given the best effort. We talk a lot about trying to inspire other people and stuff. So rather than a foreign guy coming over here and looking down on our game, I wanted to be one of the people where they go, oh, actually, there's some really quality rugby players here in this country. And so that was a goal of mine when I started in the league. And so to hear that from Billy, you know, it's obviously a big up to me. And love you, Billy. Good man.
And going from that to a guy who's been called out multiple times on this podcast by different players as a player to watch coming through, and a guy who's also now a USA Eagle, Noah, do you feel the weight of expectation? You know, you were Rookie of the Year last year. You're a confident guy. You've got swagger. I think people like that about you. But, does that put more pressure on yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. It comes with it. Pressure is a privilege, so I would rather be very confident in myself and have to deal with people expect me to perform and meet those expectations. And it's just the way I was brought up. Like, my dad, super, super, super confident guy, kind of instilled it in me, and that's the way I like to compete and hold myself, and that's just the way it is. I don't know.
Chris, we've talked to it before about the challenges in American rugby, and you know, we have a responsibility as an MLR team not only to compete at the top level but to develop US talent and to set USA rugby up in the position, best position possible to qualify and also perform at World Cups. What's it like working with someone like Nate, who's at one end of his time in MLR and still performing at the highest level, and then someone like Noah, who's, you know, really knocking on the door and challenging some of these seasoned internationals?
I think the beast within the athlete is very similar, but then it's how they control that inner beast and that inner drive within themselves and where they put that energy to drive it. And, you know, and then you can see that in different stages of their careers in these two guys. You know, you look at Nate, who now spends his time on himself, getting himself physically and mentally right to be able to perform, because he knows that he's done everything through the week that he needs to do to be his very best. And then he'll pass. And then obviously the next stage for him is then passing that on to everyone else. And then when you look at Noah, he's a young guy with the exact same mindset of being the best and wanting to be the best, but still hasn't figured out yet how to best prepare himself and what he needs to tick off to be his best, to be able to perform. So I guess from a coach's point of view, you've just got to then try and manipulate the situations to be able to get them to figure that out. So I've got to allow Nate in a position that to allow him to do what he needs to do for himself to get it, because he knows it. But then I've also got to put Noah in those positions to be able to figure that out, but then also teach him and get him to learn those as well. So the thing that you always look for, and these two have got it in abundance, is that inner beast of I am the best and I'm going to be the best, and That's what I love about professional coaching.
I love that because you clearly had that as a player as well, Chris, and you've had to probably take a lot of learnings around that to become and transition into a coach. But like, Nate, what makes you confident? How are you able to be confident in yourself? Like, what does that look like for you?
Man, I think Chris kind of hit it on the head, you know. My preparation is really key. You know, I get up 2 hours before I'm going to have to leave to be where I need to be at, just so that I'm available to wake up and do my Bible study or my reading or my prayers, get my breakfast and just tick certain things off, you know. And I've been around the game long enough where even when those things don't go right, I actually know how to still believe, you know. It's not like, oh, my watch says that I scored a 70 and now like I'm about to have a bad training session. It's like, you know, it's all putting a bunch of the pieces of the puzzle together to put myself in the best position to perform. And then after that, it's like, man, I think just trust God and trust your abilities and, you know, control what you can control. I think, you know, a bit cliche, but if I were to wrap it up, that's really it, you know.
And you've been in that pro environment since 2018, so you've been able to really get to learn and understand yourself and to get the best out of yourself. Noah, have you learned much from that from Nate, or is this more about seeing what these other experienced players are doing and finding what works for you?
I mean, absolutely. Even last year was my first year in the league, and it was my first year of seeing like true professionals. Like I was with the Sevens and maybe like Perry Baker and them, but you're not in their day in, day out, seeing them and their habits and what they're doing. So I was lucky enough to have Nate and Billy Meeks, who are very similar in how they prepare themselves and so meticulous. And there's been a lot of things that I've been able to take from that, because I'm very much more of a type B type of person, like just go with the flow and see how things go. And I just put so much work in to hopefully it works out. But seeing them do these things, it's making me want to structure things better and do these things, because the proof's in the pudding with the longevity of their careers and the efficiency that they get done.
Do you two feel like you're competing?
Always.
All the time.
Always, yeah. Yeah.
I hope so.
Every day, yeah.
But that's what makes us so close, I feel like. Because he said it too, is like, we are a lot of the same internally. We both have that very hard-headedness to us. So, I mean, at the training fields, we're always trying to take each other's heads off, for sure.
Yeah.
But after that, we're going over film together, and we're looking at things, talking through things. So, I mean, it makes two swords sharper, you know?
Yeah, I think like, you know, as long as we have respect, like Noah would be the first person, if I cross the line of respect with him, he's going to check me, and I'd be the first person to check him as well. And we've never even had that. But like, as long as there's that, bring everything else on, you know, because we're happy to be out on the field competing. We're happy to be in the gym. You know, it's like we're competing, but at the same time, it's like last week I got a yellow card from a tackle, but Noah's coming across the field to like, let me know, like, yeah, I saw you got the shot on the guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, that's the fun energy that we get to have when you're playing rugby and playing professional sport too.
And on the field, like, I only want to have people on my team that have the same mentality as that, is like, they'll put their head through someone for you. And even just, they think they're the best in what they're doing. I don't want someone who's tiptoeing around and shying away from stuff and shying away from how good of a player he is. I want everyone to know how good they are and express it.
Confidence is clearly a really important part of you guys performing at the highest level. You as well, Chris. How do you ever walk the fine line or played with players who can often cross that line into arrogance, and how can that affect both your performance and that team environment?
Yeah, I think it's like we build all this trust every single day. And, you know, quite honestly, it's like, all right, the guy you are at training is the same guy I want to see on the field. So, like, there is a switch to being at a training session, to being in a game, no ifs, ands, or buts. But it's like, I don't want someone who I don't know who's going to show up.
And how much of it is backing it up, Noah, for you? Like, that's talking big and being able to back it up.
That's what I was just going to ask, is, like, there's a difference between in practice with your own boys, like, that's more confident. And if you're acting arrogant there, like talking shit to your own boys, that's just not play on. But if you're out there on the field against other guys and you're telling them, you take them out of bounds, and you're telling them everything you just did to them and you're going to do it again, you better not come back down this way. That's different to me. And I want to know in your guys' opinions, what's the difference between confidence and arrogance?
I think, Chris, you're perfectly lined up to answer that.
Yeah, I've been on both sides of it in giving it. Like, I've given it to players and then they've come back down that channel and, you know, there's not a greater picture and clip of Jason Robinson beating me in a phone booth on a Lions tour in Brisbane with 5 metres. I gave him the 5 metre channel, and as he was coming, I've gone, take it if you dare, take it if you dare. And he took it.
that's the trade-off.
Yeah.
That's the trade-off.
But so, that's fun. Like, that's a fun way to play the game.
Exactly.
But there's that. But again, I keep coming back to it, and I'm very passionate about it. And you can word it whichever way you want. And, you know, we've worded it as feed the pack, is everything that I say and do on the field and off the field is about making sure that I'm giving my best version to the guy next to me in the team. And, you know, that to me is the difference between arrogance and being cocky. And if I'm doing it to better the team, then I think it's play on. But if you're doing it for your own self-worth, then, you know, it's your pretending.
I think we've all been around that in life, not just in rugby. Yeah. It's like, there's very clearly people who are in it for themselves, and there's very clearly people who want to achieve something as a group or with other people or contribute. Noah, you're from the Midwest. How important is it for you that you've been able to play professional rugby, like in America, but also where you're from?
It's a huge deal for the small community that enjoys it in the Midwest. And it's actually like, so I'm from Indiana, and it is like a powerhouse of rugby. For some reason, there's a lot of guys who come out of Indiana and play really high level, like Bobby Dice. But playing in Chicago, like the Midwest team, it's such a huge thing for all the kids. I got a younger brother who went to the same high school. So like, I've had a long line of players that I've went back and helped coach, and like, it's so gratifying to see them and even like their parents reach out and say what you've done with Chicago and all this has inspired my kid or inspired me to do this and go out and train and go out for this team. So that just warms my heart, and I hope that guys like me and Nate can keep inspiring those hardy Midwest kids, you know?
How important for you is American rugby and the success of American rugby in the future?
Paramount for me. I mean, this is what we're pouring our lives into. So, and we've said it before, Americans like winning at the end of the day, period. So USA rugby success defines kind of our success. So if we're winning, American eyes come to it, and American eyes will support what we're doing. And then everything else comes. It's the winning is the number one priority, I feel like. And then it can just flood into everywhere else.
As we know, Americans do love like a winning team. And I think from MLR to be successful, truly successful, and to go to the next level, we do need the USA national team to perform at the top level, not only qualify, but compete at a World Cup. Chris, how far away are we from that? It's a hard question, I know, but...
Yeah, I think, well, it's the bridge is definitely getting closer. From when I first started in the MLR in 2019, the standard of the American players has certainly lifted. The standard of the MLR has definitely lifted. You know, you want to be playing and training against the best, and you need to be in that top 10, you need to be in that tier one, and you need to be regularly playing week in, week out, as much as possible. So you put all your eggs into the Eagles, and then you kind of compromise on the MLR, and you need to keep a strength, but you need that to strengthen, you need that to keep growing, you need that to get where this becomes a closer gap to being able to perform. So when you do get to those tier one nation teams, you're in that competition. You're in it. You're not only just in it for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, you're in it for the full 79 minutes. And then that last minute of the game is where that game's decided. And that's where big teams and big games are won and lost. But it's for me, and it's always unique, but no matter where you go in the world, and that's why I love this game and the uniqueness of it, is that connection with community. And like these boys are talking about the Midwest and things like that. That's what sets us apart, because any other game is just so globalized. It's about money, where rugby, whilst there's money and it's professional, to me, no matter where I go in the world, is always about connection with community.
And Nate, you talk about that connection with community and USA Rugby as an organization. I think, hopefully not too controversially, like USA Rugby as an organization has let the playing public down in the past. You know, it's gone bankrupt. It hasn't necessarily given the pathway what it's needed. I think it feels as though things are starting to change in that respect. Scott Lawrence coming in and taking over has obviously a very clear plan. Are we moving in the right direction now?
Yeah, I think Scott's brought a lot of really good things in. I think he started with the foundation of similar to what Chris has spoken about, is, you know, our mission is to aspire or to inspire the next generation of rugby players, and to understand that this younger generation, i.e. Noah's and them, could be playing in 2031 in a Rugby World Cup, you know, quarterfinal on home soil at, like, you know, LA SoFi Stadium. That's the image, and it's pretty humbling as a guy who wants nothing more than to win right now, to kind of step aside from that mission and buy into the other mission that Scott's asking us to buy into, which is really laying a foundation that is going to be sustainable and that's going to lead us to where we want to go. You know, I just think it's funny because it's a heck of a ride and a heck of a journey. But I think Scott has done really well to put a visual mission out there for us as a country and as a playing group.
How's the balance around, like, overseas players coming into the league? And do you think that affects in a positive or negative aspect of the opportunities that you get as a US domestic player?
I've actually loved having the foreigners come over and, like, take Ali Devoto for an example. He came over here and I've just tried to pick his brain as much as possible on how he sees the game, and just, like, get a nugget from these guys. And then if you get enough nuggets, then you can put it all in your game, and maybe you get to a place where they've been. So I think having the foreigners come over is a good thing on one hand, because the younger guys learn so much. I'm hoping that in 5 years, maybe even 10 years time, that it doesn't matter if foreigners come over here, because the level is so good of Americans that, like, yeah, bring them over if they want to play in these places, but we have the amount of players that are just as good. That's what I want to get to.
Well, to get more of the story of last season, tune into United States of Rugby on Roku. Episode 2 in particular focuses on Nate and Noah's story and their journey. But a big thank you guys for all joining us today. Noah, Nate, Chris, appreciate your time. Your insight is really valuable for us as management and coaches, but also as we continue to drive this organization forward. Tune in for our games on ESPN and Fox Sports Chicago this year. Guys, up the hounds. Best of luck for the rest of the year, and appreciate your time.
Up the hounds.
Up the hounds, baby.
Thank you.
Go Dogs.